o'clock on Monday, July 29th, and so I'm going to call the Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority to order. So we are started. We're going to try to make this a reasonably, got a lot of agenda items, but hopefully we'll do them in record time. I'm going to, I just want to wish everybody a great midsummer. You got another month, so before summer is sort of officially over, so hope you had a good summer so far and a good August through Labor Day. We'll go to C1, which is the approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Any questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, great. All right, so we're going to go to Port Commission Committee Updates. Committee Relations.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, fellow commissioners, staff, and guests. Staff provided an overview of outreach activities this year, which included 17 community events and volunteer activities. Over 180 people volunteered on behalf of the Port Authority so far this year, which includes employees, their friends, and family members. The actions of these volunteers resulted in nearly 800 hours of time being donated back to the community, which ultimately helped advance the stewardship efforts of the organization. Staff then presented a draft community and stakeholder engagement policy for the committee's consideration, which is aligned with the strategic stewardship and infrastructure goals of the Port Authority. In the spirit of continuous improvement, this policy is intended to replace the 2015 Community Engagement Plan and offer further detail and a more comprehensive organizational process to engage with stakeholders. Staff outlined the various objectives of the policy and a five-step process for effective engagement. Additional elements of the policy were presented, which better provide a structure for continuous public involvement. After careful review by the Community Relations Committee, the item has been placed on today's Port Commission agenda for final review and approval. Finally, the committee discussed potential opportunities for partnership on local park projects. Thank you, Chairman. That concludes my report.
Any questions, commissioners?
Motion be accepted.
Do we need to have it accepted?
No.
Second.
Do we need to vote on this?
No.
I don't think so.
No, there's
this is not a this is more of an update.
Yeah, the policy is later on.
We're going to approve the policy later on. Yeah. We'll do that. Okay, perfect. All right. Compensation Committee met on June 25th. Staff provided an overview of the Port Houston Succession Planning Program. And this is always an important thing, I think, in major organizations like this. A large percentage of our workforce is at or nearly retirement eligibility. 12% of employees will be retirement eligible in the next 12 months, and 23% in the next 5 years. So when you add those two numbers up, that's pretty significant when you think about a staff. The succession planning has been identified as a critical organizational issue to ensure future success of Port Houston. We want to make sure that we have the right people with the right skills for the right role at the right time. Historically, the organization has been reactive rather than proactive to replacement planning. The staff has developed a plan to transition to a more strategic approach to succession management, which includes determining current and future needs and identifying critical positions needed to support business continuity, evaluating and understanding staff capabilities and comparing those capabilities to our current needs, and finally developing people to meet identified needs. The following steps have been taken regarding succession planning. We have an approved strategic plan that promotes organizational alignment. Processes have been developed and implemented, including workforce planning and up-to-date job descriptions. Staff have been given the opportunity to temporarily step into acting roles. We've expanded training and development opportunities throughout the organization. There is a re-energized pay-for-performance program that includes honest appraisals about current capabilities and steps needed to advance in the organization. And a toolkit has been circulated for identifying global gaps and critical roles to assist the managers and directors in their succession planning efforts. Future improvements to the succession plan include the following. Continuing the alignment with strategy and focus on a more organizational approach, developing processes and tools to enable information sharing, expanding leadership development programs, developing knowledge transfer plans and individual development plans, pilot projects and replacement plans and strategies, and also continuing leadership development plans. Thank you. Is there any questions about compensation?
Quick one. Is there a succession? It doesn't sound like there's a succession plan. I mean,
the idea behind the compensation committee was to do a couple things, one of which was to develop a succession plan. In the last compensation committee meeting, we did talk about what is the plan, how do you organize it, and a lot of it has to do with identifying folks and that are within that sort of planning horizon, and what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, working on their weaknesses to bring them up to be able to ultimately be in the right place at the right time with the right training. So I think it's a work in progress for sure. And over time, it'll be more specific and more well thought out. And I thought that staff presented very well in the last compensation committee meeting about sort of their approach and how they were dealing with it. Again, in the past, it's been more reactive as opposed to proactive. And I think it's important for this when you think about all the things that are going on over the next few years, especially when you add up, what is that, 38% of our staff will be eligible for retirement in the next 5 years. So you really need to be planning those people on the bench, if you will, to be able to step up and create value. Okay. Any other questions? If not, how about Mr. Branch, Commissioner, would you give us an update on the Procurement and Small Business Task Force meeting?
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners and guests. The Procurement and Small Business Task Force met on Tuesday, June 25th. Commissioners Montoya Clunan and Commissioner Meese joined me. There were no public appearances. Disparity study update. An update on our request for proposal to conduct a disparity study was provided by Keila Hicks, Small Business Coordinator. The RFP process is now completed, and as an agenda item today, staff will request the Port Commission approve a consultant to conduct the study over the coming months. Small Business Program update. Crystal Brown, Small Business Analyst, provided Port Houston Small Business Participation Update. Since inception, the program has achieved 38% small business participation with overall $557 million in awards to enrolled small business. During the first quarter, formal awards to these businesses totaled $10.4 million, a 30% participation rate. Informal business contracts total $52,000 for a total of 11% participation rate during the first quarter. Pedro Garcia, Small Business and Education Outreach Manager, also provided an overview of the program, the recent outreach activities. Procurement update. Procurement Services Director Yvette Campbell-Smith provided her department first quarter 2019 report. Looking at the procurement dashboard, she noted that $62.8 million in formal and informal contracts were entered into during the quarter, compared to $23.2 million in the 2018 period. This is a 207% increase, was tied to the purchase of 8 diesel electric container yard cranes, pipeline relocation at Bayport, and property casualty insurance renewals. Ms. Campbell-Smith also provided some detail on formal procurements. Goods and services totaled $32.7 million, professional services totaled $11 million, and construction procurement totaled $15.6 million. Finally, Ms. Campbell-Smith updated the task force on Port Houston's bi-speed procurement system. The system upgrade was put in place in May, which included improvements to the process speed and the look of the program. Important platform enhancements include small business certification and tracking, change order functionality, and new report capabilities. This concludes my report of the Procurement and Small Business Task Force meeting. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Branch. The next item, item F, Roger, you have an update?
Yeah, just real briefly, defer some, it's the mid-year financials. I think Curtis is going to do those during the audit committee, so I'll defer those. I will say, you know, that through the first 6 months of this year, still remains a strong year at the Port Authority public docks. The tonnage is up 8% for the year, 21.9 million tons. Our containers are bumping up against 1.5 million TEUs at the midway point. You know, do the math, double that. Perhaps we're going to be bumping up against 3 million TEUs. We did 2.7 last year, so that growth is remains strong. It's up 12% for the year, and steel continues to be up 14% for the year. So overall, the business keeps driving through our port, and look forward to that continuing for the rest of the year. So that's just kind of highlight of some of our operating results. What I'd like to do real quick is we've got a lot of guests, our intern guests with us today, and we've got a group of about 15 students that are interning with us this summer, and they're working on a project. But first, what I would like to do is just get them to stand up, give them their name, give the names and what division or department you're working in. So we'll start there.
Hello, I'm Max Skepp, and I'm working in container terminal operations down in Bayport and Barberscott.
My name is Camilla Plonano. I'm in the Gilda Small Business and American Education.
My name is Jasmine Gonzalez. I work with Curtis and Larry in the Accounting and Finance Department.
Great.
My name is Sarah Longoria. I work with Colin Rizzo in Emergency Management.
I'm Kara Consalmo. I'm a grad student at UT focusing on national security. I'm a security intern.
I'm Haley Wackalter. I'm the environmental affairs intern with Trey Campbell.
Hi, I'm Karina Filipovich, and I'm working at Roger Ho in project and construction management.
I'm Jeff Duong. I'm in asset management with Eric Barron and Charlie Jenkins.
I'm Max Delgado. I work with Doug Mims at the NSD San Houston.
Hi, I'm Michael Rose, and I'm with the General Cargo Operations.
Hi, I'm Diana Moriarty, and I work in the Internal Audit Department.
Good morning, I'm Riley Green. I'm with HR under Roger Walter.
Good morning, my name is Laura Zadie, and I'm with Carolyn Ashley of the Training and Development Department.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Itoro Ibanga, and I'm under Mark and Jackie under the Facility Planning.
Good morning, Sam Yonner with Channel Development. I'm studying Ocean Engineering at Texas A&M.
So each of these interns,
you don't move.
Yeah. We don't.
You didn't move.
Come on.
There were some losers. Lose your ring or something.
That's funny.
Each of these interns has a project that they're working on. Something that. For their division, they're doing individual presentations of those. Some of I haven't seen some of them yet, but some of them are upcoming this week. So thrilled to see those. But we also have a group project that they're working on as part of their 12-week internship. And hey, if you can just explain the project real quick of what they're working on. It's a community, local community.
Yes, sir. So we were assigned this summer to revamp a community garden over at Mission Milby, just down the street. And we spent the past 11 weeks designing and constructing a new idea that's more practical and feasible for this garden and creating a sustainability plan. This Saturday, we'll be having a community event, and the Port of Houston employees, as well as Mission Milby community, is invited to come and plant some vegetables and some flowers August 3rd at 9 a.m. if y'all want to come and join. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's give them all a hand.
So this is part of our succession plan. So for those of you sitting here, right, so you're still in school, you're learning, I will challenge you to have an aspiration to be sitting at this table where you're you would be involved in managing a $800 billion economic engine for the country, both national security and employment of 3.5 million jobs. And ultimately, we need you guys to step up, be able to take over for all these old guys and women here. Okay, so
wow,
you can do it.
Why did I already get
old guys, I didn't say old women.
No, it's the old part.
Old guys. I just said old guys and then comma.
That's comma.
Your fourth comma.
But also, as Lena, stand up, is Josh here? Josh, and Garrett, too, stand up. Serving as mentors for this group, and they're doing a fine job, yeah. And guiding them, and, you know, as much as you can do in 12 weeks being engaged at the Force. So hopefully they're all learning something, but more importantly, they're giving back something to us as well. So thank you all very much.
I like mentioning that Garrett is a Texas Tech grad.
Is he? Okay, yeah. Great.
So what do we do? Guns up? Or...
yeah. Every chance.
All right. Okay, let's move on to the item number one under executive. Who's going to go through this?
I'll go through those.
Okay, good.
There's five items under executive. The first one is... American Association of Port Authorities. Once again, we're recommending to continue our membership in that. We continue to review this. There is a lot of value, especially on DC and advocacy level. There's a lot of things going on that the AAPA is representing ports on, and this Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund is one big deal. So. We have voiced a lot of opinions within the AAPA. They've given us a lot of more responsibility and more voice with this. So we're recommending that we stay engaged for another year. The $84,000 is based upon your gross revenues, yep. Which. We're one of the max dues payers, along with three other ports in the country, but we've got a lot of influence where we need it within this. So we're suggesting that we're moved forward. We've got also a recommendation on items two and three for the continue the professional services for state consulting with Brown Consulting and Michael Toomey.
And an extension of the contract, or is this?
Yes, okay. This is it's at a different, we do a different rate when it's not in session,
right?
There's still, we need that representation. I don't know if Spencer's in here that he can add to this. Spencer, if you want to add to this, but it's at a different rate, I think, during the when the legislature's not in session, but we're going to have some representation
there. It's 7,000 during non-session, unless it's 5,000. So this will be for a year.
Which is a critical time that we need to and be engaging now. We need that representation in now, not just during the session. As you all know.
All right, let's take items one, two, and three. Is there a motion to approve items one?
I got a question.
Oh, go ahead.
Did these stay with us during our problem at the state?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
yes,
they did.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there was a discussion about whether we would continue to pay or didn't get the benefit of the bargain for the ones that couldn't.
Right.
And the answer to that question was they're on monthly retainers, so we did get our benefit of the bargain. We didn't have to get money back or anything like that.
I move that we adopt.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Time one, two, and three. Okay, go ahead.
And we're going to continue at state and federal level to look at what our best paths are for our move forward for advocacy in D.C. and in Austin. So stay tuned.
Okay. Are you going to do?
Number four was the stakeholder engagement plan that Mr. Corgi talked about that was put before the community committee last time. So just
move we approve, Mr. Chairman.
Adopting that policy.
Discussion.
Yes, sir.
I think staff did a great job on this policy, and I think this will enable us to clear up a lot of misconceptions about who we are, what we do, and improve relationships throughout with all of our stakeholders. However, I would like to amend the motion to add two organizations to stakeholders. I'd like to add labor organizations and humanitarian groups, namely Port Chaplains. I think they're both important part of our mission, and I would appreciate consideration.
Would you
I'll second.
I'll accept.
And you're okay with the amendment? Okay, great. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And Chairman, if I may, just to set it up on number five, there's been some recent discussion and deliberation regarding TxDOT's proposal to deauthorize some of the funding for Grand Parkway segments, namely B, C, and D. And part of I think it's an interchange that we discussed from the 2020 UTC, which is the Unified Transportation Program. So I thought it was worthwhile that we put it on for discussion and have a position on this. So
okay, great. I think we have Alan Clark from the Houston Galveston area.
Good morning, and thank you for the invitation to be here, Chairman Campo, members of the commission, and Director Gunter. It's a great pleasure to be here and explain for you, give you a little bit of background about what is being proposed and what potential impact it would have on our region. My name is Alan Clark. I'm the Director of Transportation Planning at the Houston Galveston Area Council, and we have certainly enjoyed and welcomed our partnership with Port Houston over the years in the participation of your previous chair on our Transportation Policy Council.
This is on the screen too, by the way.
Thank you. First, I might begin by just talking about what is the Unified Transportation Program. This is a document that's unique to the state of Texas. It's not federally required, but it fits into our mission to prepare long-range statewide transportation plan. We do the same for our region, which includes eight counties, Harris and each of the counties that touch it. This plan, current version, is our 2045 regional transportation plan. Then in a 10-year time frame, the Texas Transportation Commission, and through state legislation, we have a 10-year program of projects, really. This is where money is being committed to specific project activities leading to the kind of tip of our sword, which is the four-year transportation improvement program. Here's where specific funds are obligated in a particular year for project letting. So the Unified Transportation Program is TxDOT's 10-year roadmap to its districts, telling them which projects, which activities they can engage in terms of planning, environmental development, and post-environmental, the acquisition of rights of way, clearance of utilities, up to and including then actual construction of the project. So it's a very essential document for us. As you know, State Highway 99 is a tolled facility except for a few portions on the west side. And the revenue that TxDOT is talking about removing, revenue commitment is talking about removing from the UTP, would be toll revenue, not revenue paid for out of gas tax, federal taxes, or other public taxes going into the to the commission. But there are three reasons why this is so important to our region. You see them on the slide. It is a key facility. Now and will be even more important in the future for evacuation purposes from our region. It's the segments that are proposed for defunding actually are the closest to the areas that most critically need to evacuate. And of course, quite important to the economic development of our region. As you know, 99 ties back to 45 on the south to 146 on the north. In the southern segments of this facility, we're seeing a huge expansion in manufacturing, in all things related to the oil and gas coming to our region, as we are seeing on segments I and H on the east side. All these activities serve our manufacturers, who are bringing goods to Port Houston, receiving goods from Port Houston. So it's a critical part of our region's growth. And then, as I've said on the last slide, it does provide important congestion relief. It will in the future. And more critically, a real path for goods to move to and through our region. I'm not going to go through all the slides and all the details because I think of the groups I've talked to, this body is probably most familiar with these kinds of numbers. What's coming out of the UTP is shown in its value is for the construction of those segments, $1.3 billion. Actually, the total value of TxDOT's commitment to this project is more like 2.2, because they don't show you in the UTP right-of-way acquisition, the design work, the relocation of utilities, et cetera. And they also, the UTP does not tell you what is planned for 99 beyond the 10-year window. In our long-range plan, we see 99 today as certain segments already have over 50,000 cars a day on a four-lane freeway. Segment D has over 100,000 cars today. We know we will need to not only finish important access ramps, but also provide for additional expansion of that facility over time. And of course, if the TxDOT Commission does choose to remove funding for this, this is a very major project in our long-range transportation plan. Because it provides important congestion relief, it could have a negative impact on our region's air quality. It will require us to update our plan, which is right now in one more day, three more days, expected to receive federal approval for the air quality plan. So we certainly hope we will not have to turn around and start over again on the plan. I'm not sure this is new information to you. Because you're from our region, you know we need 3 days to evacuate traffic. We look forward to having the Grand Parkway as a place where the first wave of evacuation can reach the key evacuation routes, whether that's I-10, 290, I-45, without having to go through the core of our region. And we are planning major construction, as you know, on many of the freeways that are right in the core of our area. We really need segments B and C today. Of course, the success of the Grand Parkway is illustrated by these numbers up here. Now we have over 1 million people, 300,000 jobs within 3 miles of the Grand Parkway. And in the future, we expect that to grow to over 2 million persons and 500,000 jobs. We have significant announced development all along the current sections and $3.5 billion already on the sections we haven't built. So that's the confidence of the development community in their view of the importance of this particular project. Let me go ahead and skip ahead a bit. I talked about the traffic, and I'm not sure you can read this chart, but this is intended to, I think, again, validate just how important this facility is. And let me say that the question here is not whether or not this should be built as a toll road. None of us would prefer to have a toll facility versus one that was not. The issue here is when can these important improvements be made? And without the toll financing, if they remove this from the UTP, we're talking about 11 plus years from now before these projects will be ready to be considered for other kinds of funding and implementing. I mentioned that this facility is important for our future ability to move trucks. That's particularly true on the south and east side. In fact, TxDOT is working with us today to look at a concept called the I-69 bypass. And the southern and eastern sections are a part of that concept to bring traffic from the 69 corridor around our region to the manufacturers and port areas where a lot of that traffic wants to go without, again, having to go through the core part of our region. So TxDOT's schedule for acting on their UTP is the end of August. Their comment period closes on the 12th. As was mentioned earlier, there's an important public hearing on the 6th. Our policy council adopted a very strong resolution endorsing the retention of 99 last Friday. It was the first chance they had to act on that. I just wanted to provide a little bit of quick update on the contact information. They even have a 1-800 number. I would encourage you to encourage your business associates, your friends, to send in a comment. Sometimes it's not just the importance of those who are commenting, but how much of the paper all weighs when you print it out. And this is a clear case where I believe the Texas Transportation Commission is looking for support to keep these projects in their UTP. And I'd be pleased to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioners, do you have any questions?
Just a quick observation. Alan, thank you for being here, and thank you for ACAC for checking in on this. If any of you have a free Saturday, you need to drive out to West Chambers County along the existing 99 route. If you want a firsthand look at some of the logistics growth out there, we have, and it directly impacts the Port of Houston. We have the Exxon ethane cracker is online now, as well as the Chevron cracker. But the Exxon cracker has a subsidiary plant in Mont Belvieu that is currently sending 250 containers a day to the Port of Houston. All theirs is for export, and it goes along this route. I-2 is under construction now. But this proposal would cut out connector ramps on Interstate 10 at this segment. And the container traffic is massive now. What the plan is in the future is for Exxon to be able to put the container trucks on the new segment I-1 and bring them around. Right now they're having to go down 146 through elementary, a really congested zone with subdivisions, elementary schools, and such as that. So it's a matter of safety as well as hurricane evacuation such as this. But for my part of the world over on the east side and southeast side, there's nothing but massive growth. And foreign companies, KTN, has just purchased several hundred more acres. They already have around 3 to 4 million square feet of warehousing, and they just purchased property that will enable them to double that. It's mind-boggling the amount of growth out there, but all of this truck traffic has to have somewhere to go, and this is a step, in my opinion, in the wrong direction. If they defund 99, it's just it's a bad thing.
Agreed. I think we don't have a specific motion here, but I think we ought to have a motion that directs our staff to make the Port Authority's position known that we support 99 and support the leaving it in the program. So is there a motion?
Second.
Any other comments or questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
And Chairman, that may involve a written comment.
Absolutely.
But it also may, I mean, if the board wants us to, there's some public comment, maybe in Austin, I believe.
Right.
August 6th.
Whatever we need to do to support the project, we should do that. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, great. Under commercial, under G.
Good morning, ma'am. Good morning, gentlemen. I only have one item today under commercial, but before I do that, I'm pleased to announce one highlight. We have a new service to call Port Houston's public docks starting next month. The 2M Shipping Alliance, which is comprised of Maersk and MSC, the world's first and second largest container carriers, have partnered with ZIM to introduce a new Far East service to call Houston in mid-September. The new TP-88 service will call the ports of Xiamen and Yantian, China, and Busan, Korea, and then cross the Panama Canal to call Houston first as a direct call. The new service will deploy 10 ships of 4,000 to 5,000 TEU nominal capacity, eight ships provided by the 2M and two ships by ZIM. The first call, as I had mentioned, is expected to arrive in Houston in mid-September. What's notable about this new service is that Houston is the first inbound port call on the rotation, demonstrating the growing importance of our customer market and Port Houston's ability to serve Texans and their daily consumer needs effectively and efficiently. In addition to deepening coverage in Asia, consider the largest export market for our locally produced petrochemical industry. So I'd like to thank our trade development team for working on these carriers to secure the business, but also Jeff and his team and operations for providing that high level of service, which makes it possible to attract new business such as this new service. This is something we should all be proud of. So going into our one item, this month I have one item for your consideration. It's a request to extend the development and construction period of our lease agreement with Ridge at our 56-acre industrial site located just south of Bayport Container Terminal by an additional 90 days. The site is currently leased to Ridge Development, which is in final negotiations with SIVA, the logistics subsidiary of CMA CGM, which is among the world's top five container ocean carriers and is one of our longtime carrier partners and customers. We're pleased to bring this request before you today as it brings forward a five-year-long project, one step closer to reaching our long sought-after goal of developing value-added services at the site that not only support our business objectives, but also creates new jobs and delivers economic development for the local community. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
If there's no question, I'll make a motion that we adopt this. Approve it.
Second. Any other comments or questions?
Good for business.
If not, call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, ayes have it.
Thank you very much.
Finley.
No, Tim's not here. I'm going to handle
You're
it.
You're going to do it, okay.
Finance has four items this month. I'd like to talk about two of them. The first one is H1. It is to award a contract to Griffin and Strong for the disparity study that Commissioner Branch previously discussed in his comments. We received five proposals, a cross-functional team of port employees, seven employees reviewed the documents and listened to oral presentations of all five. So we brought them all in to make sure we understood what was in their proposals and how they would work for us. The team chose Griffin and Strong as the best value to the port in terms of both cost and experience. The group worked very hard and were satisfied with the solution that they came up with.
What's the timing on when will that? Assuming we approve this, what how long does it take? And
16 months for the
build.
18
times.
Yeah.
How long?
We expect to award on the 27th of this month, and the project duration is expected to last a minimum of 12 months to 16 months.
We don't take them one at a time or what?
Yeah, we're going to do it all together if that's. Go ahead. I'd rather do it that way.
The second one is number four. It's a 1-year extension for ANCO Consulting. They are our investment advisor for our pension plan, our OPEB plan, and the defined contribution plans. In 2014, the commission approved a 5-year contract and with 2 1-year options. This is the first year of the two options. This company has done an excellent job for us, not only helping us revamp our defined contributions, but also cutting the negotiated investment manager fees, where we are saving over $1 million versus the market rates for those fees. We will, unless something changes drastically, probably come next year for the second 1 year and then bid it out after that. That's all I have on these items.
Three and four?
You want me to talk about three and four? Three is just changing the ARI was bought out, and so the MLP asset manager in our pension plan and our OPEB is changing to this new company. ANCO and our internal staff has reviewed the ability of the company, and we're satisfied that they can handle it. And three is. I just missed that.
Two.
So two is just the annual software subscription for our budgeting software, which not only does our budgeting, but are also our cargo statistics. So it's a very important piece of what we do.
Okay, is there a motion to take items number H1 through 4?
Motion.
Second.
Any other comments or questions?
I'm voting against one.
I have been consistent all the way through. I feel like the port does a wonderful job. In the 7 to 8 years I've been here, never had one complaint. I think it's a waste of money. I think we're meeting the 35%. We'll continue to do it. I don't think the cost of the program is justified, and I think it puts a lot of extra work on our employees that are already doing a wonderful job. For those reasons, I'm going to vote against one.
Okay, so let's take them, take one separately so we can have a separate vote on that. Is there a motion to approve one, H1?
Motion.
Second? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nays?
Nay.
Okay. All right, and let's take items H2 through 4 together.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Got it. Thank you. Okay, infrastructure. Rich?
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. Today, there are 23 items on the infrastructure agenda, comprising a total of about $45.5 million in capital requests, as well as $10 million in receipts, including a $9.7 million state funding for improvements to Port Road at Bayport, and some $400,000 in submerged land leases. The main capital request is shown in items 5 and 6, which are the construction and then the material testing support for an expansion of the Scott Gate. This project is a 23-acre site to replace and improve the Barber's Cut Terminal pre-check and gate 4 locations. Major components include the demo of existing structures and replacing them with new TWIC gate locations, canopies, buildings, electrical, drainage, and utility services. The project is requesting about $39 million between the two items. There are 11 other items for capital that cover a planning study, dredging fees, fencing, electrical and rail maintenance contracts, contract amendments for increased quantities we're experiencing at the rail spur project, and a new hydrographic survey system. So the last item is a fancy name for our new survey boat. It's more than just a boat. This will replace our 20-year-old technology and state-of-the-art abilities to evaluate the channel depth, get access to our waterfront structures. And with it in action, and with the better equipment, we'll be able to keep more frequent eye on the potential shoaling that happens from time to time, which may enable us to collaborate and plan more proactively with the Corps and the pilots, and ideally avoid draft restriction surprises.
I'll take any questions. I would just point out that in the briefings that I had, I asked for a memo that went through the thought process and sort of return on investment analysis and justification for the expansion of the of a Barber's Cut entrances, and I thought that report was very concise and very well drafted, and had when you make a $39 million plus add in the rest of the activities, you really want to think about, is it the right time and can it be phased, and is the capital going to be sitting there not necessarily earning a return? And I thought the staff did a great job of summarizing their thought process and in going forward with this project. Any other questions?
I have a question on 14.
Okay.
Who engineered this job? I assume it was engineered.
The engineer record on 14 is LAM.
And it seems like to me they didn't take the trouble to check with Seabrook's requirements, and that's costing us an extra $186,000, so that's another blow in their engineering. They didn't check the size of the box. They didn't check the casing, so it sounds like to me they engineered the project, but they really didn't do any back work on it. They didn't pay attention to what they were doing, or we wouldn't be doing this today. Am I right?
Partially, I would agree with partially. I've spoken with staff about that, and once we put the construction drawings together, then the authorities get a second look at the drawings of how we're going to build it. And both TxDOT and Seabrook came back with new requirements. So these weren't anticipated at the time of the design, which was a couple years ago. They are a requirement. We would have to do that work anyway. It's not really causing, you know, a loss of efficiency. We don't like to have that kind of change in quantity to happen during a project, but this was really new news to us, new news to the design engineers.
Well, it needs to be done. I understand that, but it sure seems like to me the engineering company should take the time to check if you're doing something in right. the city of Seabrook or Pasadena or Houston or wherever with the rules and regulations, and they'd have found this out going in, not after we got caught in.
I agree 100% with you.
Considering that a mistake on them, that's a mark, in my opinion, against that engineering firm.
And we're making note of these kinds of issues, and we have conversations around.
What's the value of the project? I mean, as percentage-wise, it's changing.
Yeah, the value of the project is 13 point. I think it's 13.8 million, 13.6 million.
Couldn't remember.
Yeah. And with a project of this kind of size and complexity, you're going to have adjustments that have to be made. And typically, 5 to 10% change order rate is, you know, it's a reasonable and yeah, we don't like to have change orders, but if you have zero change orders, that means there's a lot of risk that has been priced into the contract to begin with.
Gotcha. Any other questions? We'll take a motion to approve items I-1 through 14.
Motion.
Second. Other questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. All right, that moves us to permits and licenses.
I goes all the way up to 23.
Oh, does?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Great. So I'm sorry. Let's change that motion to let's do a new motion from 15 to 23.
Motion. Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Next. And since I missed that one, operations.
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners.
No
way. Ops has a heavier than usual agenda this morning. That seems to be the trend. With 10 items for your consideration. Five are related to software, and the others are related to maintenance. I'd like to take a couple minutes and kind of highlight some of our software applications here and how important they are to us and some of the things they do. J1 and J2 pertain to the upkeep of our Navis terminal operating system. That operating system is really the brains for our facilities. It's been in use since 2001. By all of our facilities, general cargo and container as well. Internal users use it, and certainly our external users have access to it. It manages vessel and cargo movements and all the billing services we provide. So J1 is in support of the EDI management. That's how we communicate with our customers, customs, et cetera, electronically. It also has database and server management in it as well. That's an extension of Charles Group. We do some of that in-house. And we rely on these guys for after hours and to do some of the heavy lifting that we can't accommodate ourselves. J2 is for the annual maintenance. We have done this once a year since 2001 with Navis, and it's a program that as we grow, the services, the expense for the services grow with us. J3 is related back to the item that Rich had for the gate that Chairman spoke about. These are the brains for the gate. This is the gate operating system in J3, and we do this. We carve this out separately. This is kind of operations vendor that we work closely with, and it's an extension of the existing system. The gate operating system provides the gates to the brain. As truck drivers pull up, it's kind of like a McDonald's drive-through, except we have 60 lanes and about 20 people. Servicing 9,000 transactions a day through our facility. So it's a similar concept, different level of magnitude. But the gate operating system provides cameras, scales, interface, gate arms, software interface, very complex. We've been really pleased with SmartTex. Our gate downtime has improved since we went with them a couple of years ago. Some of the things we're doing now with SmartTex includes giving drivers the opportunity to pre-register ahead of time and take fast lanes into the gate. They can provide us a PIN number, and those transactions are really expedited. We're really pleased with those guys. J4 is another piece of software. It's an AIS vessel tracking software that we've been evaluating. It has to do with automation of our billing process. We build geofences around our dock. That's what we've been, our docks, that's what we've been experimenting with. And through AIS, as ships arrive and depart, we can carve out those exact times and create an automated billing process for their length of stay. And we've also realized some other things that we can do. We can compile a lot of data about the channel through use of this software. So we're really beginning to understand what we can do with that data. Staying with software, I'm going to skip down to J10. It's a maintenance item, and this is crane management system that needs to be upgraded for 9 of our cranes at Bayport. Maintenance uses this item for assessing, troubleshooting the cranes. When a crane is not performing properly, they'll go to this software and it'll tell them to go check the flux capacitor or something along those lines. Anyway, we also use it for productivity measures as well. We measure crane performance through this software upgrade as well. J5 through J9 are all maintenance related items, and we can talk about any of those specifically, but I did want to highlight the J6 with Gray Bar Electric and our staff recommendation there. Just the procurement process. This is the incumbent for the recommendations for $1.75 million of electrical and lighting components, and this is the incumbent. And we had selected them through a co-op. So this go-round, we decided to go test the market and do a bid process. And so that same company we've been using came back, we got 3 proposals, and they were the low bid. So it brought some foundation. It solidified the co-op that we've been using. But at any rate, those are all the ops items. I'll take questions.
I have a question on 5 and 6 as it relates to, these are individual parts.
5 and 6.
Yeah, that's Russian gray bar.
Okay. I'm sorry, what was your question?
So these are individual parts.
Yes, sir.
And my concern always is the tracking of those parts and making sure that, you know, that we aren't in a situation where, you know, we're buying parts and they're moving out to some other private source or whatever. What are we doing as it relates to the inventory management of these parts?
Well, we have a complete inventory management system at both of our container terminals in particular, as well as central maintenance. And we strive to continue to improve it, but you know, we've had Maxine's group audit this process completely and thoroughly. We have a lot of confidence in it. As we rebuild, we have master plans to rebuild the shop at Barber's Cut, and that's where parts are housed differently there than the other two facilities. Bayport and Central Maintenance have a strong, you know, system in place, and Barber's Cut with a new shop will improve that management process of inventory. But we feel like we're strong in this area. We put a lot of effort in maintaining that parts management.
Okay, great. And that McDonald's arm, are y'all planning to add nuggets with the process?
We'll provide whatever the commission approves.
We want our Yelp reviews to
yeah.
be good.
Yeah, there you go. Any other questions? If not, I'll take a motion to approve items J1 through J10.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. All right, next up. Jessica, good to see you again.
Good to see you guys. Morning, Chairman and Commissioners. It's good to be back. I wanted to just take a moment this morning to recognize Dave McNamara, who unfortunately doesn't seem to be here today, but he stepped in my absence. Oh, I guess he's in the hall. along with the people team who really stepped up and provided leadership while I was out on maternity leave. So I just wanted to recognize Dave. It was a good example of an acting opportunity that he was able to fill in, and I think it was pretty seamless from the perspective of Roger, who didn't have to deal with some of the people issues while I was out. So I just wanted to say thank you to them.
Good planning.
Yes, exactly. Next, I'd like to provide a brief update on our strategic planning process that we're about to kick off. As you'll recall, we completed our current strategic plan back in 2015. We are required every 5 years to relook at our strategic plan by statute, and so we are about to undergo that process. In the 4 years since the adoption of the plan, we've made a lot of progress towards our achievement of our vision of becoming America's distribution hub for the next generation, and we've completed a lot of the goals and objectives. However, a lot of new challenges and opportunities have emerged that warrant recognition in the new review of the plan. And so I just wanted to kind of go over what the schedule is going to look like. During the strategic plan process, there's going to be really three main touch points for the commissioners, and more if you guys would like to engage more. So first off, we're going to be in the next couple weeks, in early August, we will have Richard Beatty and Nick Davidson with ICF, who we have contracted with to help facilitate our strategic planning process. They will be coming in and doing individual interviews with all the commissioners, as well as some of the leadership team. This information is going to help guide an internal cross-functional team that we're deeming the design team. This is staff that has been selected from various areas in the organization, from various levels as well, for input into our plan. And they'll essentially be creating a straw man that will go back to the commission and then as well go out to external stakeholders for review to gain input on the direction that we're going. So essentially the straw man will come back to the commission for review and input, and then finally at the end of the process you'll have obviously the review before we seek approval of the plan. So we are targeting approval ideally in January 2020. In case we need a little bit more modification, we have until April, but ideally we'd like to push it out at the beginning of the year and then start rolling it out. So that's just kind of an overview of the process. If you have any questions on that, I'd be happy to answer them.
I do want to encourage commissioners to engage in this process because, you know, when you think about it, it is mandated by the state, but on the other hand, it really is about setting strategic direction, and that's what the commission really ought to be doing. When I think about what we do as a body, you know, we're about setting strategic direction, and then ultimately that gets handed off to management, and then we give management the tools and the resources to make it happen, and then we make sure that they're held accountable to make it happen. So if we're not engaged in that process at the top level and that strategic vision, then it's hard to operate really effectively as a body. So hopefully you'll be able to engage in the process, and because I think it could be a very, very positive thing for us to do. Okay?
Perfect.
Go ahead.
And finally, I just have one item on today's agenda for your consideration. That is for a one-year contract with 2 one-year options for our employee and payroll integration services. Essentially, this is our benefits open enrollment service, both for our employees and also our retirees. It also helps us with our federal reporting requirements that are required under the ACA, the American. We are recommending for approval, plan source benefits administration.
Is there a motion?
Motion.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We have no items under port security emergency operations. That's always good sometimes. Technology, Mr. Thompson.
Morning, Chairman, Commissioners. The Technology Division has 7 items on the agenda for your approval. I'd like to step through all 7 of them because they all have an impact on port-wide operations. Item M1 is for the approval of a 3-year contract to implement electronic accounts payable processing. Today, the invoice approval process is very manual and paper-intensive, as Curtis could attest to. With this solution, we believe we'll be able to make the approval processes more efficient, and the finance and accounts payable department more efficient as well. Again, the 3-year cost for this item is $111,500. Item M2 is for the approval of IT consulting services. Currently, the Navis Infor system, which Jeff just described, only runs in one data center at Bayport. Due to the importance of this very complex system, we'd like to investigate the ability to have it run in multiple locations. If location redundancy is possible, we will come back for additional technology to implement that. But if location redundancy is not possible based on the application, we will document that so we have understand where we are. The vendor that we selected in this process is the same one that Jeff mentioned that does after-hour and weekend support. And they believe very strongly they can design a location redundant solution. And that cost is not to exceed $60,000. I'd like to take items M3 and M4 together. M3 is the annual technology refresh of network infrastructure components. In this case, switches at the Bayport Data Center. The current switches are approaching 8 years in age, and that's pretty old in my world. Item M4 is a replacement of network switches in this executive office building. They're also very old, probably approaching 7 years of age. The sense of urgency is not just based on age, though. As we know, there are certain components around the world that have tariff restrictions. There could be at least as much as a 90 to 120-day lead time if we don't get the order in as quickly as possible. So we like to be able to do that to make sure tariffs don't impact our lead times. And as an aside, NetSync, the chosen vendor, is SBE certified in the PHA program. Items M5 and M7 are information and cybersecurity related items. Item M5 is to increase our capabilities in what we call intrusion detection and intrusion prevention in our platform called InfoBlox. The cost for this particular increase is $70,000. M7 is upgrading an existing firewall at our Bayport Data Center, where we house most of our operations equipment. That item will not exceed $120,000. And finally, M6 is for network storage port-wide. This is an annual maintenance agreement, and the expenditure is not to exceed $300,000. With that, I'd be happy to take questions.
Make sure there's any questions. I'll take a motion to approve items M1 through 7.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Perfect. Okay, I think we're on to executive session.
I'll take a brief
break.
Yes, brief break.
And we'll go to executive session. So we'll adjourn to executive session at 10:01.
Yes. With now 10:12 a.m., the Port Commission of the Port Eastern Authority of Harris County, Texas, will now convene in a closed meeting as permitted by the Texas Opens Meeting Act and Government Code to conduct a private consultation with attorneys, including consultations regarding legal aspects of proposed annexation by the City of Morgan's Point, claims of the Port Authority against RPS Klotz Associates, and proposed amendment to the Agreement for Legal Services of Ewell Brown, Blank & Knight, deliberate regarding real estate, including disposition of Bayport Terminal, vicinity property, and Pelican Island property, and acquisition of Turning Basin vicinity property, economic development negotiations or incentives, employment evaluation of public employees, including deliberation and consideration of possible action regarding employment of the executive search firm, and security-related matters, including cybersecurity risk or vulnerability assessment matters. The Port Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned.
52. So let's go ahead and restart the meeting. So do we have some motions? I'm sorry.
So moved.
Second.
What was that? We have to read.
Dude, I was like, what? What are you talking about?
We have to read the motion.
No. No. We're not starting the pilot board meeting yet. So out of executive session, we have several motions. So Commissioner Branch?
Yeah. I move that we authorize the Port Authority to acquire property in the vicinity of Industrial Park East Terminal from Rains Land and Property LP on the terms discussed in executive session, and authorize the executive director to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Great. Commissioner Corgi, I believe you have one too.
Mr. Chairman, I move to authorize the Port Authority to settle its claims against RPS Klotz Associates, Inc. on the terms discussed in executive session, and to authorize the executive director to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
I think we have one more.
I move to authorize the Port Authority to amend its agreement for legal services with Ewell Brown, Blank & Knight, LLP, on the terms discussed in executive session, and to authorize the executive director to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, great. So our last item is adjourning the meeting, but I just want to remind everyone that our next meeting is September 24th. We are not going to have a meeting in August, so we will have the next meeting September 24th. So we'll now formally adjourn the meeting.